Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of the Moonalogs. Hello world, hello change. I hope you're feeling good and amazing and you had a lovely day or are looking forward to having a lovely day, because we all know it depends on attitude. But yeah, let's challenge that. For today's episode, we're going to talk money. I don't know if you enjoy talking about money, if you like to spend money, if you like making money, or if this is all a bit of a cringy subject matter. Maybe you believe that money is the root of all evil. Who knows? There are so many concepts around money in every country, in every culture, and I thought it's high time to clarify these things. Because money is always linked to our sense of self-worth, and I was wondering, does this really need to be the case? Today I'm joined by money expert Sarah McCrum, and she helps us to solve this money self-worth conundrum. I hope you're enjoying it, and let's do this. Do you recall the 90s TV ads that ended with the catchphrase, "Because I'm worth it"? I think they were selling hair coloring products and cosmetics and stuff. The gist was, if you consider yourself worth it, you'd spend their money on their products. It's not the 90s anymore, but the question of our worth and value are as prominent as ever. How do you define your worth? What is your value? And how does your worth, your value, relate to money? Self-worth, value, and money, somehow it's a tricky combination. The relationship with money and worthiness, you know, and finance usually brings up a lot of worries. We worry if we should invest or not, if we should save or if we should spend, or, you know, how to keep our business afloat in a crisis. And all this attitude is so filled with anxiety that I think we should change it. I personally struggle with my money relationship and I have no idea how to change it, but I'm happy that I can talk today to someone who is a lot wiser on this topic than I am. I'm very happy that I'm joined today by money relationship expert Sarah McCrum. Sarah is an author of several books, one of which is Love Money, Money Loves You. And together with Matt Murphy, she does a podcast called The Spirit of Business. Sarah offers online classes and trainings helping people transform their relationship with money. And I think it's more than 10,000 people have become more relaxed now, thanks to you and your work. So welcome to the Moonalogs, Sarah. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you very much. And yeah, what an interesting introduction to this whole topic.
Yeah, it somehow came back to me, the whole you're worth it, who's worth it, and I'm buying. So that's how it started anyway. But how are you? You're in Australia.
I am. It's the end of my week now. It's Friday night. And it's a good time to relax.
Excellent. I feel like I'm talking to the future as it is Friday morning here in Germany. So
yes.
Very nice. But let's get right into it. I mean, usually on this podcast, I'm always happy to talk about optimism and inspiring things. But sometimes that means we have to start at things that are not going so well. So again, as I said in the introduction, a lot of us struggle with our relationship with money and worthiness, and we don't have a clear and joyful relationship. So I was wondering, what do you think, why so many people struggle with their relationship with money?
I think the main reason is that people don't really know what money is. We take it for granted and we just think, oh, money, yeah, there's these notes and these coins and there's an economy and, you know, we have to earn money to be able to pay our bills. And so we interact with it all the time. And unless people are working with money at a very high level, like people who work in the financial markets, they sometimes have more of a feeling for it because they see these big movements of money around the world. But most people, I don't think they ever stop to ask themselves, what is it really? And then the other thing is that we've grown up with so many stories about money that make you feel that it's probably really bad, potentially very dangerous, corrupting, evil, and like you're better to be poor, but you want to have money. It's like, how do you deal with that? If you have money, you may be greedy, maybe corrupt, maybe, you know, it'll get you into a really difficult place. But most of us just would really like to have more money. There's so many contradictions in there.
Oh, definitely. We have quite a number of idioms concerning or relating to money, and one of them is, for instance, money ruins friendships. So it's always a
Oh,
struggle.
is that a
Well,
German one?
that's a German thing, yeah. We like
I've never
if
heard that. We
your
have money
friends
is
are
the root of all
money.
evil. No, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Even worse. Yeah, so
Yes.
but it does something to our perception of money. You mentioned that people who deal with finances on a big scale have a different look on money. They see, how would you describe that look? Because I don't deal with that kind of money yet.
Yeah, they do quite often have a genuine understanding that money is energy, which is the understanding that I have. I think I see it differently from them, but they see it in a way as a flow, which it is. It's actually, in a way, it's a kind of, it represents a flow of value around the world. I do something that's valuable to you, you give me money. A country produces lots of things that are valuable to another country, and lots of money is transferred, lots of goods are transferred. And so they see the big patterns, not only the little ones. We see, I pay money when I go into a shop. I buy something online, I click a button and it says pay now. We see these little transactions, but they see those in millions and, you know, big multiples, which turn into big flows of value.
Yeah, that's I can understand if you deal with the big flow of money, then that is your approach, or you can see things in a different way. As I'm not there yet, I tend to see it in a small and more tangible, let's put it that way, experience. What I enjoyed though is you have money scorecard, because it gives, as I understood, it's a place where you can start to evaluate your relationship around money. But how exactly does it work?
The money scorecard, it asks you 40 questions. It's quite a big, like, self-assessment in a way. They're very simple questions to ask, but they're divided into four sections. The one's about money, your relationship with money. One's about work, because we mostly work in order to make money. So our relationship with work is really important in our relationship with money. Then there's the whole thing about purpose, because purpose links with work and money, and when they're all aligned, you have a much better experience of life than when, you know, you make money here, but it's not aligned with your purpose and you hate working. That's a very, really terrible experience. And then we also look at your financial organization, which some people are great at, and lots of people, I especially notice people who really struggle with money, are terrible at financial organization, especially their personal finances. But the thing about it is, what we're really looking at is not how much money do you have, but how do you relate with it? It's rather like a marriage. Like, how do you relate with your partner? Is this a happy relationship? Does it feel fulfilling? Do you enjoy it? Do you feel that you receive value? Does it feel satisfying to you? When we start to get into those kinds of questions, we start to be looking at our relationship with money. And I think that's the really interesting bit.
I really like that analogy, because you would not like to go home to a partner you don't feel comfortable with, where you think that, oh God, I have to talk to that person again, and they're in my house and in my flat. And yet with money, we usually have this attitude. It's sort of, oh God, I have to pay my bills, or I have to talk to the bank. And it's cringy, but it's not something that makes us feel comfortable. Yet you said that, I mean, if I look into your history a little bit, it's not that you have always had a perfect relationship with money, I would assume, because there was a part where you had to close your business due to the financial crisis and following recession, if I know it correctly, back in 2010.
That's true. That was a hard time. Having to close the business, having to lay people off who were working there, and just the, you know, the terrible sense of failure that you have with something like that. That was very hard. But that was actually the beginning of me discovering a different relationship with money, because I literally had nothing then. I had no money, and I also had no work. I was used to working practically 7 days a week, and suddenly, once it was closed, nothing to do. Except thinking about, okay, so what business could we do instead? We didn't have anything. We hardly had a pound or a dollar to start something on. So that was a tough time. But what happened was, I was given a little book that had exercises in it, and one of the exercises said, "What would money like to say to you?" And I found myself writing in my notebook, and it was like money was talking to me through my pen. And it was saying all these amazing things, like, I would like to tell you to love me. That was the first thing it said. And then it just talked about itself. It said, I'm a beautiful energy and I'm here to connect human beings together. And, you've misunderstood me and you're far too afraid of me. And it's like, it was so sweet and so generous and so different. I grew up in a family where we didn't really talk about money. We never learned about it. It was largely ignored. And here was this energy somehow talking to me, saying, I'm completely different from what you've thought. And that was the turning point for me of beginning to look at money a different way.
Yeah, I think it's as we said in the beginning, or you mentioned earlier, and the different belief systems we have, money is the root of all evil. That has such an impact on us as individuals as much as in a society as a whole. That when someone says like you, it was like money talking to me, telling me I should love it. It's like this is odd. This is something new, and it takes sort of time to adjust to it. But you also mentioned having to close your business is a sense of failing, and feeling like a failure, or failing in inverted commas, is always looked or in relation to value. So I'm curious, how do you see the link to value in your money relationship?
Well, what I've come to recognize, and it took me time, to me, every bit of life, every human being, every piece of life, from the tiny worms to big trees to planets, whatever, everything has this intrinsic value. It's just like by being alive, we are value. It's like we're pure value. And you can't compare the value of this human being with another human being, or a tree and a worm. They're just a part of life, and every single thing has its place in life and has absolute value because of that. So I feel that it's really important that we recognize that first of all, because that means that your value as a human being has nothing to do with how much money you earn, how successful your business is, or any of those other things, what kind of house you live in, what kind of relationship you have. None of those actually really are anything to do with your value. And it's like we've forgotten that. And I know people, and I know how easy this is. I've experienced it myself. Your income goes down and you feel somehow less worthy. Or you see somebody who's making way more money or whose business is much more successful, and you feel they're somehow more valuable than you. But when you stop to think about it, that's a nonsense. This absolutely doesn't make sense. So I really feel it's important for us to reflect on that. This is not something where I can just say, hey, magic, you have this amazing value, and you forevermore you're going to understand that, and it's going to change your relationship with money. This is deep. It takes deep reflection and contemplation about value, the value of life. And you are a part of life, so what's the value of you as a part of life? Think of a baby. Does a baby have less value because it's small, or more value because it's fresh and new? Like, just silly, silly questions. But why is an adult somehow different from a baby? It's just a bigger baby, really. So I just feel we need to pull that apart. And then we can talk about value. We can talk about the value of the products or services or work that you provide to somebody else. And that's not a measure of your worth or your value. That's a measure of something that you provide that is of value to somebody else. It's a completely different thing. It's a negotiation. It's external to you. And people have got this confused, and I hear them say things like, I don't know how to price my work because I don't know my value. It's like, you don't price your work on your value. Your value is absolute, is intrinsic. You're valuable because you're alive. You're special, you're beautiful, however you want to look at it. But you price your work according to you. Part of it is what you want for that, and part of it is what another person, how the other person values what you're offering. And, two different people might have a very different value for the same work.
Yeah, I totally understand. I relate to that. I mean, I work as a freelancer, and depending on who my client is, my work is worth anything, let's say, between 200 euros, and it can, could go up to 5,000 euros if I were a high selling person. But it's interesting that if I've defined sort of in my work, I would or need or want this amount of money for the things I do, then to go into this negotiation and not feel that people are not. That people are judging my work with money, you know, and I don't know yet. I mean, maybe you have an exercise or suggestions how to not slip back into this mechanism of thinking, my worth is defined on how much I make.
What I really recommend for this is this reflection. It's really thinking about, like, go out for a walk in nature, for example, and look at a tree and say to yourself, what's that tree worth? And then look at a blackberry bush or a stinging nettle or anything, a butterfly, and say, what's that worth? Really? Or a bee. What's a bee worth? What's a whole lot of bees worth in the world? Bees hold our entire ecosystem together. These tiny little things that buzz around and can sting you and just go from flower to flower. And yet, the entire ecosystem of the planet at some level is pollinated largely by bees. So, what's the bee worth? And that's a tiny little piece of nature. And then start looking at the people. Let's look at people. Go for a walk in the street and look at each person on the street and just ask yourself, what's that person worth? What's that child worth? And if you keep doing that, at a point, I believe you will come to recognize what I've said is that it just doesn't make sense to try to put money on it. And that will help you to separate my worth from the worth of my work. So your work is not you, it's something that you contribute to somebody else, and somebody else has something to do with the price. So I think that that's a really beautiful thing to do, actually, just that, walk in nature and then walk in the city or in a town where there are people and really ask yourself that question. And then the other thing that's very interesting around value, and this is where your sense of self-worth does come in. If you think I'm not worthy of much, you will tend to underprice and lack confidence when you're selling things. If you overestimate yourself, you'll tend to be overconfident in selling things. People can usually read the energy of both of those, but if you can just be yourself, because you are valuable, because you're you, and because you're different from anyone else. It's not about comparing, it's the fact that you're unique is a part of that value. Then you have a freedom. There's just a freedom in you to create a price. And it's not dependent on do I feel good about myself or not.
I think it's so important that we get to a place that we look at ourselves differently, because when I see my friends and observe people or colleagues I work with, so much is based on how much do we make. If I leave one job and choose another, then oh yeah, I need a pay grade for that because now I've moved on and it shows that I prosper or that I am someone, and we measure our value constantly in relation to the things we possess, or the money we make. And you are looking, well, you're shaking your, I think you're shaking your head no in a way to say yes.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense. I get it. I get it that people do it, and I get it why they do it. But I have a friend who lost, he was very successful when he was younger. And then he lost all everything. It was one of those big financial scandals, and he lost all his investments. He lost absolutely everything. And it took him 20 years to find himself because his identity was so invested in the money that he possessed that when he lost the money, he lost his identity. But again, let's think about a child. If your child, for example, I don't know, has a bad day at school or fails an exam, do they become less of a person because of that? No, you still love your child even if they fail in an exam. So failing in an exam is rather than like losing money or not having so much money. It doesn't make you less worthy of love. It doesn't make you less of a person. It just means you're earning less money. You know, some of us learn it. A lot of business owners learn this, I think, when they have an experience like I had where I lost the business. And you sort of have to figure out in the end, oh, but I'm still the same person. I have all the same, I've got all my knowledge. I didn't lose my knowledge. I didn't lose my experience. The business is not here anymore.
Yeah, I think it also gives a hint towards that we believe we can control everything. So
Yes.
if I'm successful, that means that I've done everything right. And if I fail, then naturally I must have done something or everything wrong. Otherwise, I wouldn't have failed. So we exclude any other possibility. We're
Which
very
makes us incredibly self-centered. It's like
yes.
it's all about me, which it never is. Yeah, it's such, I th just feel that it's such a delusion. It's such a delusion to think that I'm responsible for everything and I control everything. Most of us have experiences in life where we realize I really don't control everything. And life is unpredictable in many ways. But to me, that's really part of the beauty of it. If it was really predictable and controllable, it would be like some kind of weird video game where you can just repeat it over and over again until you know how to go to the next level. But there's much more life, there's more aliveness, there's more possibility in life than there is in a video game.
Interesting thing is also that money is a universal force. Every country has money. We may pay it with different currencies, but we still use it, and it has such an impact on us. If I recall correctly, you are advocating sort of a new economy, or I'm wondering how this approach of valuing ourselves differently, how that would play out on a global scale or just a national scale.
Well, if you look at the way our economy works at the moment, it's actually based on the concept of scarcity. It's based on the understanding that there are limited resources on this planet, including a limited amount of gold and, you know, precious things. And therefore, we all somehow underneath have this feeling like, so if I give some money to you, I've lost money and you've gained money. It's funny because if I give money to you, normally you've given me something. So I've gained something from you and you've gained something from me. But and many people I know who make quite a lot of money have this underlying guilt. It's like other people are poor because I'm rich. But that's actually not the case. And I often tell a story which is really simple, but I think we don't think about it. Supposing let's say we have a 100 euro bill. Okay, and you provide me with something, and so I give you 100 euros. Okay, so I've now got 100 euros worth of value, and you've got a 100 euro bill. Now, you use that 100 euro bill to buy something for yourself. Let's go say you buy lots of nice food and things like that. So you've now got 100 euros worth of value, and I got 100 euros worth of value, and you pass that bill on to somebody else who can now go and buy 100 euros worth of value too. So every time that bill moves hands, its value, so to speak, is increased by another 100 euros. So we look at it, it's like this one bill of 100 euros. But actually, it's worth how many is it? It's like how many times does it move? That's really what it's worth.
Yeah.
So 100 euros could be worth 1 million euros or 1 billion euros as long as it keeps moving. And so we start to see that, and we start to think about, or what I started to think about because of the writing that I did was what would an economy look like that would be based on abundance rather than scarcity and generosity rather than competition and this feeling like I've got to get it for myself because otherwise somebody else will get it. Supposing there really is enough. Supposing there's really enough for everybody to experience abundance at any level, how would we do things? How would we do business differently if we based it on that?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, this sounds like an abstract thought, but in Germany or in Berlin, we have high skyrocketing rents. They are just increasing abundantly, so to speak. And then they had a law in place which said, okay, you have to decrease to a certain amount your rent, but it was pending if the law was accepted. Anyhow, so for a few months, I had a little bit more money in my bank account, and it felt like all of a sudden my whole anxiety shifted. And I find this so interesting because if you just play it in your mind, some people can get into it in the sense of, okay, what would you do if there was an unlimited amount of money to your for your use? What would you do? And for other people, you go into a very it does not feel possible. But then if you just sometimes, there are different games like, okay, carry 100 euros around or whatever amount you feel comfortable, but more than you would usually have with you, just to see how much more relaxed you become in your relationship with money and spending and generosity.
I think being relaxed is really important. It was one of the biggest messages that I got. I wrote lots of messages for money, and it was over and over again talking about being relaxed about money. And what I see most with people when I teach, when I run courses with them, the first thing that happens is they stop worrying about it. So if you think about it, when you worry about it, you're just giving energy to all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah,
And
but
so
how
you're making it more likely that things will go wrong.
Yeah, law of attraction kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah.
But I mean, when you moved to Australia after you lived in London, then if your business failed, so to speak, and then you moved to Australia, and then if I know correctly, you didn't have a lot of money. Did that kind of fear or worry sort of sneak into your nervous system, your being?
When I moved to Australia, yes, I remember the point where I had 2 weeks until we would run out of money, and I didn't know anyone in Australia. I came here, my husband and I came here with, like, literally, we had two suitcases and a box and a computer. Thankfully, we had a computer. And I just had to start a business and get to a point where I could pay the bills, pay all the bills immediately. I didn't have any chance. That was actually when I really started using the book and all the stuff that I'd written about money, because I didn't have a regular way of making money. I was so new here, I couldn't call a bunch of clients and say, "Hey, I've got a new product. Do you want to buy it?" or anything like that. I really just had to kind of listen to these messages that I'd received about money that showed me a different way of doing it. And we did it. We started, I mean, when we started, literally, I remember, like, it felt good if I had $20 in my bank account. That was kind of my bottom level, was about $20. And I would go to supermarkets and I'd always be looking for the red labels with, the cheap products and stuff like that. And we started from there, and we had to pay the rent every week, and all of that stuff. And we did it. And there were so many things that I learned during that time about money, and about how to get money when you haven't got any, and how to pay for something that you really want when you don't have the money for it, and all of these things. And over again, when I applied what was in my book, it actually worked. And it was genuinely different. I mean, we've learned a lot about manifestation now, so quite a lot of that is somewhat familiar. Yeah, it was very simple and rather beautiful. But I have to say that, I had many times where I was thinking, "Help, I have no idea how I'm going to pay this bill."
Yeah, and I think it comes down to trust as well. It's about relaxing, not worrying, and trusting that it'll come. And I find this element of trust is one of the, at least for me, most challenging, especially when there is no outer sign, so to speak, that things will come, and then to say, no, I'm still going to trust that things will work out.
Trust is a really interesting one, because you kind of have to trust at the times when you don't trust. It's
Exactly.
easy to trust. Like, I can trust that I'm going to get lunch today, or, that's easy because I've done it every day and it's going to work. I can trust that the sun's going to go down and it's going to come up in the morning. But to trust that I'm somehow going to work it out and have the money to pay my rent when I can't see where it's going to come from, it's almost like you're trusting against trust. And that's really interesting, I think. It's really interesting what happens when we override our own past experience, which says you should be really worried about this. And you say, no, I'm actually going to live differently here. And I'm going to trust because for me, usually it was, I've tried everything that I can try. And I don't have any more actual solutions right now. And then I would have to really go into trust. And it was quite remarkable how that worked.
Yeah, I can imagine because what like you said, you have trust against trust. It's sort of overriding your past experience and your rational brain. But I've made the experience one, two, three, five times, and it always worked out like that. So why should it be different this sixth time? But it's like, yeah, but this is where trust comes in. And like you were saying, trusting in money, trusting in that things will work out, trusting in a relationship. All of these things are general examples we come across whether we like it or not. And
Well,
when
I
we
guess actually
decide
you brought up relationship again, and that's exactly the point. If you think about a relationship with another human being, you simply cannot run it on rational lines. It's not a rational thing. It's about connection and love, and somehow it touches the deepest parts of yourself. And if you would say, well, rationally speaking, if I behave this way, then the other person will behave that way, that's
like
not a
me.
relationship. It's just like we can tell immediately. But we try to do that with money. So this is why I paid so much attention to money and our relationship with money, because it's much more alive than we realize. It's not a dead, static thing. This is what I learned. When it says it's energy, it means it's alive. It's part of life. And therefore, it's very flexible, and it's much more, it's not really like a human, but it's much more like a human relationship that's dynamic, that's changing all the time, and where love actually makes a difference. Like if I'm loving towards my husband, it's really different from if I'm really kind of rational and professional. If I had a professional relationship with my husband, I just don't think it's going to work very well.
It's a nice idea. It's like, well, we've had our ground rules. If I do this, this will get more or this will get less, but this is how our relationship works. Yeah, that's not what we want from life, is it?
Well, exactly. And and if I feel really unworthy of your love, which many of us have had that experience, I feel really unworthy of your love, that's actually no fun for your husband or whoever, whatever. To be with somebody who's like, oh no, I'm not worthy, oh I'm not good enough for you, it's like that's really boring actually. Nobody wants that. Or like, oh, I'm so amazing, I'm so superior to you. That doesn't make a good relationship. What makes a good relationship is two people, who are different and who love each other and who work it out when they have problems with each other. And money's kind of like that. It's like this kind of energy that you have a love relationship with. That sounds really odd. But when you start to do that instead of a worrying or a stress relationship, it's just like if you're worried and stressed at home all the time, it's hell. It's the same with money. Just start to relax about it, start to invite it into your life, stop thinking it's the devil, and actually treat it well. And it's quite fascinating what happens as a result.
Well, I'm definitely curious how I'm going to put this into practice. But going back to values again, in one of your blog articles, you quote John Demantini, who said, "When you live according to your lower values, you require motivation and you suppress your genius. When you live according to your highest values, you become inspired and awaken genius." So I'm curious, what are your highest values?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I've done a lot of work around these kinds of questions recently, also with one of my groups. So, in terms of actual values, I value a few things, especially. I value nature and natural ways of doing things. So I value natural health, for example, and I don't use medication and haven't done for more than 30 years now. Because I really value the natural systems that I have. I value beauty. I really believe that one of the things we can do as human beings is add beauty to the world, make the world a more beautiful experience or a more beautiful place. And so I value that a lot. I also value simplicity. It's funny, although I was very clever at school, I somehow it made everything complicated, and it wasn't enjoyable when it was complicated. And so I ended up really valuing a kind of universal simplicity. But what's interesting is John DeMartini has a different way of looking at values. So if I did his, he does has a values exercise, which is brilliant. It's actually it's very, very makes you very honest with yourself. And if I look at his exercise, it would come out, what would come out is that I value energy and consciousness. That's my number one value. I value business. Second is business. What was the third one? I can't remember now. But so he makes you look at what do you spend most time on, what do you spend most money on, what do you put your energy into, what shows up all around you. So from that perspective, yes, all my exploration around energy and consciousness and spirituality is really important. And then my business is what I really put most of my energy into.
Yeah, because I think if I understand the quote correctly, and also from our chat, it's mixing both, which will bring you purpose and as well, I think, joy. And it seems that you've combined all of these aspects in your work and in your business.
Yes, I find it's really important to combine whether it's the spiritual or values with something tangible. So, for me, like my business, if I was just doing business for the sake of doing business, I wouldn't, that wouldn't mean anything to me. But my business is so aligned with my purpose. My purpose is more, I feel it's more about, I talk about liberation of the human spirit. You know, that feeling really of being free in yourself, just like a complete human being. I feel that that's what we so often long to experience, just this, just real inner freedom. So that's closer to my purpose. And I'm really lucky in a way because I can teach that. People come into my work often because they're interested in their relationship with money. But it leads to this exploration of who am I? Because we're talking about value, all these things that you've been mentioning. So who am I? And that's what takes us into this exploration of freedom and of what it means to be a human being. So I get to teach this kind of beautiful stuff because of these experiences I had around money.
I think that I like the, I mean, we have that in common in the sense of I long for inner freedom. I remember as a child when people asked me what I wanted to be when I was growing up, I said free. I always wanted complete freedom. And yet when you look at, again, our economic system, what happens is we choose a job in order to provide for our life and our loved ones. And some, I would say more often than not, it turns into a cage because we get disrupted from or from connecting to our values. And I don't know, I feel that sometimes people don't even know what their values are.
I think that if we really do some of the deeper work, like some reflection, again, some contemplation, I think these are very important things in human life. I personally believe that even if you're doing a job that you don't like, because you have to earn some money, you can always bring your values and your purpose into that. Like, for example, if my purpose, if I call it liberation of the spirit, but let's just call it freedom for the moment, is freedom. What, even if I had to do a horrible job, what stops me from expressing freedom in that job or feeling free inside myself, even if I'm doing something I don't like? I've still chosen to be there. It was actually a free choice in our society. And no one controls my spirit. No one controls what happens inside me. So I think that it's easy for us to think, oh, you know, I've got to go to work, I've got to earn some money, I've got to do these things, I don't really like doing it. I have all this freedom. I could say, oh, I've got to answer emails, I've got to do this interview, I've got to do this. I could think exactly the same thing. So I'm doing the same things as anyone else. I talk, I write emails, I like probably the same as you do, and the same as lots of people do, really and truly. But, you know, what's happening inside us? Like, do we have to think about it that way? Or could we use whatever work we're doing as a chance to express joy or freedom or to find peace with it or whatever it is that's important to you? I know that we can do that. It's not easy, but we can. And the more we do it, the more we'll find we tend to attract work that is actually aligned with our values. It's just important to put the values first.
Yeah, I totally hear you. But I also have that experience that sometimes when it's administrative stuff, so we come back to financial organization. By the way, I scored on that the highest, which completely
Wow.
surprised me because I thought I don't feel particularly organized when it comes to finances, but there you go. But coming back to the fact that I have to do administrative work, and I remember clearly that one day I was sitting down and looking at, well, numbers and paperwork and things, and I thought I have to do it anyway, so I might as well do it in a positive spirit instead of moping about it and thinking, oh, it'll take forever. It's like, no, well, you got to do it, so you might as well do it with joy because the time is spent equally, frowning or smiling. So I choose optimism.
Exactly. And I mean, and what a difference that makes.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'm curious. I mean, we've talked about business a little bit, but when it comes to money and NGOs, I mean, I know that the rules are universal, but somehow I find it interesting that a lot of NGOs or change makers, is there a difference, is basically my question, between NGO work and change makers and businesses that offer a certain service or product? Because a lot of NGOs require donations. Does this have an impact? I mean, I'm not sure if I can even phrase the question correctly, but do
It's
you
a
get my drift?
very, I think it's a really interesting question. I know what you're asking about. Like, fundamentally, the way I see it, an NGO or a business or a family for that matter, they're all fundamentally businesses. They all have budgets, they all spend money, and they all need money to come in. So a business will sell services and products in order for money to come in. An NGO will go and sell in a way a story in order for money to come in. So maybe it's the story that, if you give money to us, it's going to enhance your reputation. It's just an intangible service that they're providing. But they're still asking for money, just like we all do. And a family also, the money comes in through whoever in the family does the work. So money needs to come in and money needs to go out in all of these. And I think that that's the significant thing. What's really interesting about NGOs and nonprofits is that they often have a quite complicated relationship with money. That's what I see. It's made out that it's somehow more virtuous because they're asking for money, but in one way they're constantly begging, and I think that's very uncomfortable for them. And they can have their tap turned off. The government grant isn't offered this year, and suddenly they've lost £1 million or whatever. So they have this dependency relationship as well. Now, the same things can happen in business, but in business, you often feel that you have more power, I think, to change direction. So one of the big things I feel really strongly about is that we build better models in the future where. Like, to me, it's crazy that we have to ask rich people to give money so that poor people can have clean water, for example. Or, like, what a nonsense kind of world. Like, whoever could have invented a system like that? How can we even have a world where we have people who don't have clean drinking water or don't have enough food when we have so much? It's like, that's just not set up the right way. And then we have to go and beg rich people. It's like I almost don't believe it. And even if it's if it's as simple as businesses, the business part and the giving part, or the that other work part being more closely connected with each other, that's one thing. I'm more interested in and working on a system where it really won't be about philanthropy. We started talking about value. What's really interesting is what happens when you start to put money where there's real value. So where there's value for life, If you think about it, a tree that's alive doesn't have a value, but if you cut it down and kill it, it's suddenly valuable because it can turn into something. That's weird. When you think about it, that's very weird.
Yeah.
And fish, a fish in the ocean isn't seen as valuable, but it's valuable when you haul it out of the ocean and kill it and you can put it in a fish and chip shop. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with eating fish, but there's something wrong with our valuation system that we can then, burn down parts of the most valuable forests on the planet so that we can feed cattle to eat McDonald's or whatever it is, without thinking that that forest has value in itself. And so we need to look, to me, we need to look at value. We need to build an economy around what's actually valuable for life, first and foremost. And what's valuable for life is certainly our ecosystem, our environment is essential for life. Our health and well-being are essential, absolutely essential for life. And then, of course, all the other things, the social interaction, the money, the financial systems, business, they're all essential as well. But if we can value things so upside down at the moment, then that just makes a mess. So I think that this is the really important thing. Once we can do that, we don't need to rely on philanthropy because we bring money to the valuable activities that are being done that are improving the quality of life of people. That has value. That's where money should go. So we need to reinvent the system a bit.
Oh, I really applaud that. I'm joining. I like that as well. The other day I had a conversation with a friend. This cartoon that explains the difference between equality and equity. There are three kids standing and looking over a fence. And they're of different heights. So in equality, they are all standing on the same box, which means that the largest can see over the fence, but the smallest can't. But it's equal, right? Right. And then you have equity, and then people get a different height of box so that all can look over the fence. And we were talking about this, and then at one point she was saying, "We should just get rid of the fence." And it was really speaking to me because we both realized it's the system that we've created. It's not, yes, I can provide different boxes to different people and we still can all manage to look over the fence. But who said that we needed a fence in the first place or that we still need it?
Yeah, or that we need to look over it as well. That everyone needs to look over it. Maybe one person needs to look over it and the other one should turn around and look the other direction.
The lion coming. Yeah. No, yeah, I really like that. It's a very vivid explanation. And I really think that at the moment anyway, that a lot of people saying, okay, the system that we have built on is not working anymore. There are so many examples coming up, especially in the relation with money. The other day there was an article on Elon Musk and how he's now the richest man or has accumulated more wealth than any human being before. And I'm thinking, oh, this is an interesting article, but do we think this is such an important, again, the value thing that with one person and then the rest of the world and what is also happening? And I think that there's, like you were saying, we have to look at the world at large and not just chunks of it, because after all, it's all connected.
Yeah. And also we need to learn what money is and how to have that kind of relationship with money where you can create the level of wealth that feels really good to you. Most people are not going to want to be an Elon Musk anyway.
No.
They're not going to want to do what he has to do in order to have that much wealth, and they wouldn't want to figure out what to do with it all. So everyone's going to have their own level of contribution and also of wealth. What's sad at the moment is because there's so much ignorance about money, I think, that the vast majority of people feel very powerless in their relationship. I think that it's really important that we feel powerful in that relationship. I might not have as much money today as I would like to have, but I know that I can grow it over time. I feel powerful in that. I think that that's a much better way of approaching it.
Yeah, and I think one step towards getting there is also to stop comparing yourself.
Yes.
As you were saying, everyone will have a different level of what what is their need, that not everybody wants to do what they have to do, like Elon Musk, in order to get there. But what is the right amount of money for you? And how is it aligned with your values? I find it important that we live and combine both of these things.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's obvious in a way. You can feel immediately. It just feels better, doesn't it?
That's a good note to end on, to feel better immediately. So, thanks again, Sarah, for taking the time in the late evening of Friday in Australia. And well, for those of you who are interested, you can check out Sarah's podcast, of course, The Spirit of Business. You can visit her website, sarahmccrum.com. I'll also put it down in the notes at this episode. And maybe we'll have time to talk again in a while and see how new topics and money relationships have developed in the world at large. So thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you too.